Short week, long on the issues.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, the incredible shrinking home values, North Korea blasting at the markets, and the star of the show could be a lot of hot air. First, where's Wall Street? The S&P 500 at this hour, right now flat, and the NASDAQ about down, up about 0.7%. The Dow pretty much flat as well, up about 11 points at 82.88. European markets lower right now, 1-2%. In Asia, markets fell. Korean shares lost 2%. Japanese stocks lost 0.3%. Let's check in with Julie Neiman right now, analyst at Smith Moore & Company, joining us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
Let's talk about this North Korea missile firing test today. They did a couple of them. They did that nuke test yesterday. It seems to be affecting markets. What goes into the psyche of an investor, Julie, when we have this political situation unfolding?
Well, nobody's shocked over North Korea's behavior. It's very consistent, but it's another reason to be very cautious, and we've got investors very nervous here, simply because stocks aren't cheap. If you look at the S&P 500 with the price-earnings multiple, depending this year or next year, it's between 15 and 22. That's not cheap. So any kind of news to hit the market is going to cause investors to rethink everything.
Today, Julie, another gauge tells us that the economy of real estate is barely coughing along. Analysts had expected some encouraging news from the Case-Shiller Housing Price Index, but instead it showed prices took a nosedive in the first quarter, more than 19%, the most in its 21-year history. Does anyone really know when this thing will bottom out?
Well, the estimates these days are going on to possibly 2012, simply because of the banking industry as well. Spite of the fact that we've got a new housing construction basically is stabilized, no increase there. Demand is a little bit better. Mortgage rates are at historic lows, and all the money flowing into Fannie and Freddie has made mortgage money available to some extent. But home prices are still falling, over 30% over the last couple of years, and that's the key thing. There's not going to be much of a pickup until you see better job growth and income are still falling.
So they're all interconnected.
You've got it.
All right. Julie Neiman joining us this morning from St. Louis. Thank you.
You bet.
We appreciate it. Well, people are trying to sell their homes for the most they can get. The Obama administration is trying to help some homeowners stay in those homes if they run into trouble. They've been looking to loan modifications, but a new report suggests they aren't stopping defaults. From Miami, here's Marketplace's Dan Gratch.
Fitch Ratings will release a report this week that shows subprime loans that have been modified still fail more often than not. Fitch studied mortgages bundled into securities from 2005 to 2007. The report's conservative projection was that up to 75% of modified loans would fall behind in payments within a year. Chris Mayer is a professor of real estate at Columbia Business School. He says loan modifications are actually delaying a housing recovery.
History has suggested it's much better to have the foreclosure take place quickly and to move that property into the hands of somebody who can afford it and who wants to live in that house.
The Fitch report says that public pressure has led many mortgage companies to assist too many homeowners. Kim Rupert is with Action Economics.
It is a downward spiral, and it just has to work itself out, unfortunately.
In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, May 26, 2009 at Marketplace.org. UAW members meet today in Detroit to vote on a cost-cutting deal with General Motors. That includes plant closures and job losses. But one item still looms over those talks, whether GM will take cars assembled in China and sell them here in the United States. It's a huge jobs issue for the union. But can the company produce quality vehicles in China? Here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Consultant Kent Kettle owns a made-in-China car, and he puts it up against anything from Detroit. He drives a Regal from Buick.
The Beike, they call it, is you tell someone you have a Beike, and you're pretty cool.
Kettle's Buick rolled off the GM assembly line in Shanghai about 6 years ago. It then accumulated what Kettle calls China miles.
You know, not only the stops and starts of driving in a big city like this, but you're going over a road that is being repaired, and they don't worry about smoothing it over as they're repairing it. They just leave the human-sized potholes there.
Under the hood, Kettle explains most of the parts also come from China. And he says so do most of the components in your car.
Wiring, pumps, hoses, very often the batteries are made here. Things like hydraulics, very high-tech, highly machined parts, some of them are still shipped in from outside, but more and more, they are made here.
In 2011, GM hopes to assemble 17,000 Buick LaCrosses in Shanghai and sell them in the U.S. The company already imports cars built in Mexico and Korea. And if you wonder about China quality, former Chrysler executive Bill Russo says you shouldn't. He is an industry consultant in Beijing.
GM doesn't have a North American production system and a China production system. They have a production system.
And the quality checks are the same.
And those standards are global. They're not dumbing down the car for China.
If anything, industry folks think GM's plants in China are better because they're newer. Auto analyst Zhong Shi.
The robots in the Chinese plants are the latest. Other factories abroad brought their heavy machinery years ago, so they're not going to upgrade anytime soon.
Of course, China's big advantage to GM is cheap labor. And to the UAW, tens of thousands of American jobs are at stake. It's a painful reality of globalization, and Bill Russo thinks the auto industry has come late to it.
The Apple-style rethink of where do you innovate, where do you assemble, where do you localize your parts, that fundamental rethink in this global context really hasn't occurred.
GM's union talks are still ongoing, and in the end, they could decide not to import cars assembled in China. Still, the dominant view from here is it's just a matter of time before that happens. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Hyundai's eyeing some deep pockets with its new entry this summer, the Equus. As Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, the Korean carmaker's motivations are going far beyond the luxury car customer.
Hyundai may be one of the world's largest automakers, but
here in the U.S., there are many folks that look at Hyundai and see that as a low-end product.
That's Alexander Edwards, who heads the automotive section at Strategic Vision. He says at more than $70,000 a pop, the Equus will compete with luxury cars made by Mercedes and BMW. Jeff Schuster at J.D. Power & Associates says Hyundai's hope is that the Equus will lift the entire brand's image.
It's really looking at moving from what really has been perceived as the economic choice in the various segments that they've been playing in, which tended to really focus on the small basic cars.
The Equus has been selling in overseas markets for years, but Alexander Edwards says attracting a high-end U.S. consumer won't be easy because a lot of the buying decision comes down to prestige.
When I get in this vehicle, am I going to be James Bond? Am I going to be Batman? Is it going to be able to magically transform me into that ideal self I have in a luxury vehicle?
Hyundai's been building up to this point in the U.S. with rollouts of increasingly fancy automobiles like the Genesis and the Santa Fe. The question, Edwards says, is can it gild its image without alienating its low-end consumer base? In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
The euro fell on currency markets this morning following reports from Germany. That country's financial regulator was quoted in a British newspaper saying that the toxic debts of German banks could explode like a grenade. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard has more.
The head of Germany's main financial regulator warns that the country's banks could blow up if they don't seek the protection of the government's bank rescue plan. He's quoted in Britain's Daily Telegraph saying that rating agencies could be poised to downgrade the bank's mortgage-backed securities. He says that will eat into the bank's already depleted reserves. Markets could then kill any bank that doesn't have government backing. Dan O'Brien is with the Economist Intelligence Unit. He says the regulator is warning that Germany faces an additional problem.
The banks will have two hits. They'll have a hit from toxic assets, and they'll have a hit from a very deep recession from German companies going bust and individuals not being able to repay the loans.
The regulator's warning coincides with news today that in the first quarter, the German economy shrank at its fastest pace since reunification in 1990. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We're going to take a look at the book business now. The biggest store on the block, Barnes & Noble, reported a loss last week. Today, we'll hear from Borders. It started its online operations late, and it's limped along behind the competition for years. The recession hasn't helped either, but now investors are hoping some unusual new managers will turn things around. Amy Scott reports.
Borders' fate rests in the hands of two finance guys. The new CEO comes from private equity. The chairman is an ex-hedge fund exec.
From the financial standpoint, hopefully these guys know how to turn around a business.
That's longtime Borders stockholder Lou Kassman. He's not convinced the new bosses know how to run a book business at a time when more people are buying at Walmart or reading electronic books. The new management plans to scale back music sales and slash costs. Analyst Michael Norris with Simba Information says that won't be enough.
I just worry that they don't have, you know, their finger on the pulse of what book retailing and book selling actually is, because you can't cost cut your way to prosperity in the book business.
Norris says Borders needs to take a page from independent booksellers. That may mean deploying weapons rarely used in the cutthroat world of high finance, down-home events like readings and cooking demonstrations that draw people into the stores. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
You know that appliance or electronic device with the Energy Star symbol on it? That means it uses less energy, right? It's a good thing, right? We're learning the way we get to that little star may be a bit deceptive. Is it a scam? Let's ask Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll from the Sustainability Desk.
Okay, no, it's not a scam. It is, however, a program with problems. Steven Saltzman is a deputy editor at Consumer Reports. He says the results are questionable because the Energy Star program relies on data provided by manufacturers.
We're not saying that they lie, but the testing procedures that they're following allow them to report data that's just simply not accurate.
Consumer Reports checked a few Energy Star rated refrigerators and found the claims fell short. The manufacturers had taken measurements with ice makers turned off. That's not typical use. Also unusual, testing a dishwasher with a clean load, but some were tested that way.
There's nothing that indicates to us that there is a problem or that we're getting incorrect information from manufacturers.
Maria Vargas is from the EPA. She says her agency and the Department of Energy test bestsellers to make sure the self-certifications are accurate. They also raise standards every year, so Energy Star appliances exceed average efficiency rates. Vargas says those appliances can drop household utility bills by a third.
He said Bosch doesn't have the water softening.
At Absolute Appliances in Hollywood, California, Meryl Akhmajian cares about those savings.
We don't want anything extra that takes extra space or, you know, extra energy. We just want it to be compact and usable.
All of them should have an energy guide.
The manager of the store, Edward Tellis, is helping Akhmajian find a new dishwasher. Tellis says a lot of utilities and states also offer rebates for Energy Star appliances.
There are some customers, that's their first thing, is energy. Energy efficiency, or it could be, you know, that it's green. That's really the new hit big word.
Saltzman from Consumer Reports says as all appliances become more efficient, Energy Star standards should be raised higher and faster.
You've got to raise the bar. You've got to make it that much harder for companies to get there so that, you know, people are buying what is genuinely the most efficient.
President Obama has called on the Energy Department to do just that. And a bill supporting the same aim is moving through the Senate. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Maybe you've got one of those ice makers or dishwashers with a little star on it. Tell us how they work or whether they work at our website, marketplace.org. Plus, share your thoughts there. Our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, is in the scratch pad. Well, he's not in it, but he'll help you around the scratch pad at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.